Good Tuesday, everybody. Welcome in. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Chase McCabe, Michelle Knezevic, Nick Kieser here with you on this Tuesday. Hope you're having a great start to your day. A little bit of a different feel coming in this morning. As, you know, obviously all eyes are on Cincinnati or Buffalo right now. As we keep our eyes and ears and prayers and thoughts on DeMar Hamlin. In that situation, it was very, very scary, Michelle. Hope you're doing well today. I know you just had 3 hours of, you know, kind of talking about this, and, you know, we're going to spend a lot of time on it today, as we should. But so I was at Monday Night Raw, which was in town in Nashville last night, and word started to get around pretty fast that, well, you know, first you see, okay, the game's been suspended, and you're going, what is going on? And then, you know, fortunately, unfortunately, Twitter is the main source of information. Yes. And I start seeing all these tweets about it. And, you know, I am not one to, when something like this happens, I don't seek out to see it. I, you know, don't necessarily want to. But at the same time, you know, knowing that I wasn't watching the game live and knowing that this is something we're going to be discussing, I eventually saw it on TV. But it was just, it's one of those bizarre and just scary situations. And I don't know why I thought this. And I know he will give great insight, but I immediately was like, all right, we need to get Chris Sanders on tomorrow. Because I think Chris just always has great insight on things. And as a coach now, you know, of high school athletes and then a former player, but he'll join us at 10 o'clock to discuss that situation. Also the Titans. But I just had this, like, you know, once I kind of wrapped my head around what was going on and my friends that I was with, it was just like, we're there to have a good time at a show, but it changed. And, you know, so thoughts and prayers with DeMar Hamlin. The Bills did issue a statement. Mm-hmm. I think this was during the night, 1:48 a.m. DeMar Hamlin suffered a cardiac arrest following a hit in the Buffalo Bills game versus the Cincinnati Bengals. His heartbeat was restored on the field, and he was transferred to the University of Cincinnati Medical Center for further testing and treatment. He is currently sedated and listed in critical condition. I know I've seen that his vitals seem to be going back to where they need to be, but he's still sedated and in critical. So just scary.
Just in an awful situation. And Chase, you know, on Robbie and Rex Road this morning, it was primarily discussing this whole situation. Last night I was finishing up a show and thinking, okay, I'll turn Monday Night Football on a little late and you get that ESPN update. And then, similar to you, wasn't watching it in live time, but, you know, go and you look for a video and you watch it a couple of times, and then you see reports slowly but surely start to unfold regarding this whole situation. And a big shout out to the entire broadcast team.
Oh.
Because when you head into a game like this, one of the biggest games of the year, right, primetime, and so many eyes are on this game, and then you just see something that is just so incredibly tragic and, you know, gives you the chills. And people, I mean, it's trauma. You're in shock when you see something like that. You don't know what's happening. And then you see the medical staff run out there. And I feel like as fans, as broadcasters, watching a game on TV, you always wait for the players' thumbs up.
Right. You watch the players.
You always wait for, okay, can you see hands moving? Can you see feet moving? What is the reaction from the coaches? What is the reaction from the other players on the field? And this was something that I had never seen before because you never see them, you know, they go to Josh Allen and Joe Burrow's faces and just complete terror on their faces. And they were, you know, next to him, near him on the field. And we're watching from the TV from a million miles away and can even feel just the amount of terror in everybody's eyes and faces. And you know, that broadcast crew, to have to talk about it where there's no real new information. I think Ryan Clark did a great job on, you know, expressing how this is a sport we love, but at the end of the day, you know, it is so incredibly dangerous, Chase.
Yeah, it is. And that's the thing. I loved how you all this morning, you know, were like, these guys are humans. Mm-hmm. You know, there is a human aspect to this. They don't need you or me or anyone else to tell them that this is a dangerous game. They know that. I mean, that's a part
every
of it.
Day.
When you put the pads on, you know. And you know, DeMar Hamlin knew that when he ran out of the locker room last night. This game, believe it or not, has come a long way, you know, but it's unfortunately never going to be 100% safe. This is this is just something you don't see. It was very bizarre in how, because, I mean, he stood up, you know, he made the hit and they stood up. And then he fell over.
Well, you think of maybe like adrenaline standing up and then your body. And you also, to another point, obviously the number one concern is his health and, you know, thoughts and prayers to his family. His mom was there in the stand. She was able to ride with him to, you know, the medical center. So thank God she was there that night, able to be with him during this scary, tragic time and didn't have to watch it on TV. But you feel for his family members, his friends, watching it on TV, not able to be there. And then another point that I think Joe brought up, you know, you feel for players like T. Higgins, who he collided with, and you think about their mental health and what's going through their minds right now, and all the players and friends and teammates and even all the Cincinnati Bengals players who experienced this firsthand. You're watching a traumatic experience happen in front of your eyes, and you think about the mental health aspect towards it as well.
Yeah, David in Portland actually said that, prayers for T. Higgins as well, and absolutely right. T. Higgins, a Tennessee product from East Tennessee and a tremendous athlete. I mean, again, you know, you know, I think back to Ryan Shazier with Pittsburgh and that scary situation and watching that. There's always the other side of it. You know, there's the player that gets hurt and, you know, you're worried about, and then there's the one that was on the other end that, you know, you need to be concerned for different reasons, but obviously think about. The NFL made the right move, you know,
100%.
Postponing the game. There's no update on that. I do know that I saw that Troy Vincent, who's the NFL's vice president of football operations, said that any report or speculation that there was a 5 minute that Goodell was telling them, you get 5 minutes to warm up and let's get the game going again. He took exception to that and said that was insensitive. I don't know if that's true or if that's not true.
Yeah, I saw that report as well as Robbie and Rexford was finishing up. I mean, Joe Buck said it on the broadcast. Yeah.
And he got that from somewhere.
That was my point. He got it from somewhere. You know, hope that wasn't the case.
Yeah, but here's what I'll say to that. I've never been in a situation like that before.
A lot of us haven't.
But I've been in situations where everything's changing by the minute.
Mm-hmm.
And you kind of have to understand that you can't plan for something like that. So do I think that maybe there was a, hey, we'll warm back up? There probably was, if I had to be, you know, and I'm just guessing.
When
I don't
they
know.
Didn't know all the facts.
But then, you know, because in the moment, it's like, all right, he's in the ambulance. He's going to the hospital. He is where he needs to be. He's going to be taken care of. What do we do now?
Mm-hmm.
And what I think probably happened is team said, coach, we can't, no, you know, we're not there. And because then you have to talk about it and think about it, because there's a safety element. Because if I'm Josh Allen and my head's not in the game, and at that point my head's not in the game, my head is on my teammate.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I'm thinking about. It's dangerous to him to go out and play.
Oh, to all of them. I mean, even the Cincinnati Bengals players who weren't teammates with DeMar, just to experience that.
Right. And you think T. Higgins wanted to go back out there?
No. I mean, it really was a situation that you can't even fathom how they were feeling in that moment. And you could tell just by the shots on their faces. And, you know, at that moment, whoever made the decision, whoever spoke up and said, I can't do this.
Yeah.
Because this culture of football and being tough, and even just males expected to be tough in society and, well, be tough, you can't show emotions and things like that. Whoever, you know, stepped up, and I think it was, you know, the coaches and the players and probably a big group of people who said, you know what, like, we can't do this. This is bigger than football. This is life and death situation. And, you know, props to them for canceling the game. I know some people had thoughts on if it was quick enough, but I do understand the point of it, and Joe brought this up this morning. He saw a thread on Twitter of, you know, you have this Monday Night Football national event. You have so many people in the stands that you want to make sure that the whole medical staff is able to get in there and they're able to get him out before you cancel a game and everybody's running everywhere. And it's almost like the Wild Wild West. So, you know, suspending it, making sure that the player is on the way to the hospital and they can figure all that out first before you cancel it. And then
they did what they needed to do. And they did it the right way. And the right way doesn't always come right away, you know? Mm-hmm. And I applaud ESPN because that's a tough situation to be in. You don't know what to say, what to show, all those things. You know, Troy Aikman and Joe Buck have been together for a long time, been doing this a long time.
Lisa Salters
has been doing this a long time. There's no playbook in this. So I heard Willie on Robbie and Rex Road referencing Uri Fisher. I remember that. I was watching that. David Poyle talked about it. You'll hear some of that a little bit. But, you know, that was a scary situation. I remember Rich Peverly, a former Predator, when he was with the Dallas Stars, he collapsed on the bench in a similar thing. And, you know, it has happened, but you don't know what to do. You kind of have to take it minute by minute, and I think that's what NFL officials did last night. You know, coming up next, I want to hear from Ryan Clark because I thought he had some really good insight with Scott Van Pelt last night. But this is more than a game. I know there are standing implications. You know, in the football aspect of things, there's a lot to figure out.
Yeah.
The NFL will figure it out.
They'll figure it out.
We will discuss that. And also take your calls and texts on our phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025, as we discuss DeMar Hamlin here on Chase and Michelle, 1025, 1063 The Game.
What was your sense of how dire the circumstances were?
Yeah, it was when all of the players came out onto the field and took a knee. The entire Bills bench emptied and was out on the field, and the way that the players, all of the players, the Bills and the Bengals, the way they formed a human wall around DeMar Hamlin, that let me know there that this was not just another injury, that there were things going on behind that human wall that we shouldn't be seeing. They were trying to respect that young man's privacy, and rightfully so. So that was when I realized immediately that this was not just another injury, that this was something very, very serious.
Lisa Salters, ESPN, tremendous sideline reporter, did an excellent job last night giving her thoughts. And look, kudos to Scott Van Pelt, too. Chase and Michelle here, 1025, 1063 The Game. Scott Van Pelt, I thought, did a great job anchoring such a tough situation. With that, but you know, it's when things like this you know, happen, you go to people that were there. You want perspective, you want, you know, it helps tell the story. And unfortunately, there's a story element to this. Obviously, the big theme is that you hope DeMar Hamlin is okay. Again, still in critical condition. He's sedated after suffering cardiac arrest. And I wanted to bring this up in the first segment before we get to Ryan Clark. So I mentioned I was at wrestling last night. Jerry the King Lawler is from Memphis, and a longtime pro wrestler, has suffered multiple heart attacks in his career and his life. There was one, he was on live television doing Monday Night Raw, and he's doing commentary, and you're listening to him, and all of a sudden you hear, and it's because he fell over on the table because he was having a heart attack. And luckily he's okay. Mm-hmm. And he tweeted, "I would be willing to bet that DeMar Hamlin has suffered a cardiac arrest from the blunt trauma of that blow to the chest. I know what that's like from experience." And that stood out to me because when you watch it, that, and I'm not speculating, I'm just, you know, I saw that and it was interesting because I wondered if that's what it was, because that was where it was so bizarre of how he takes the hit, he stands up, and then, you know, kind of falls over. I mean, I know they're, you know, the whiplash of hitting, you know, the ground and all that. But I thought that was an interesting perspective. So, again, thoughts, prayers with DeMar Hamlin. Ryan Clark last night, longtime player who actually, you know, had a medical situation of his own that was different. in his career, but he talked with Scott Van Pelt and his thoughts on the situation.
What words can we even put to this? What would you share?
I think the first thing, this is about Damar Hamlin. Mm-hmm. And it's about a young man at 24 years old that was living his dream, that a few hours ago was getting ready to play the biggest game of his NFL career, and there's probably nowhere else in the world he wanted to be. And now he fights for his life. And when Damar Hamlin falls to the turf, and when you see the medical staff rush to the field and both teams are on the field, you realize this isn't normal. You realize this isn't just football. And so many times in this game, and in our job as well, we use the cliches, you know, I'm ready to die for this. I'm willing to give my life for this. It's time to go to war. And I think sometimes we use those things so much, we forget that part of living this dream is putting your life at risk. And tonight, you know, we got to see a side of football that is extremely ugly, a side of football that no one ever, that side of football that no one ever wants to see mm-hmm. or never wants to admit exists. When you see both teams on the field crying in that way, your first thought is Damar Hamlin.
Yep.
The second thought is his family. And this isn't about a football player, right? This is about a human. This is about a brother. This is about a son. This is about a friend. This is about someone who is loved by so many that you have to watch go through this. I dealt with this before, and I watched my teammates for days come to my hospital bed and just cry. I had them call me and tell me that they didn't think I was going to make it. And now this team has to deal with that, and they have no answers. Mm-hmm. And so the next time I think that we get upset at our favorite fantasy player or we're upset that the guy on our team doesn't make the play and we're saying he's worthless and we're saying you get to make all this money, we should remember that these men are putting their lives on the line to live their dream. And tonight, Damar Hamlin's dream became a nightmare for not only himself, but his family and his entire team.
Ryan Clark, longtime player, now with ESPN. And I well said. And, you know, as much time and you know, I'm not trying to sound old here, Michelle, but, you know, you've been here a couple years now. But,
yeah.
You know, the longer I've been around D-Mace and worked with Brad Hopkins and Chris Sanders and, you know, these guys that they did this. They did this for Floyd Reese. You know, they did this for a living. I have more of an appreciation for what they did, because look, we've all been fans, you know. I told Chris Mason one time that I yelled at him when he was with the St. Louis Blues and like, you know, you suck, Mason, and stuff like that. And you know, we're all going to be fans, but you do have a different perspective when there's a situation like this, of like Robbie and Joe were talking about this morning. There's a human element. These guys are human. They live and breathe and bleed just like we do. And, you know, while they understand the risks involved, it's still when something does happen, you know, there's going to be a reaction to it. And, you know, I said earlier that I've never been through a situation like this before, and I haven't. You know, I've had some issues, you know, where a friend was, you know, not doing well and, you know, things like that. But one thing that I thought about when I was 14 years old, you know, being a huge NASCAR fan, I remember when Dale Earnhardt died. And mm-hmm. and I remember every moment of that entire day. He's, you know, was my favorite driver, my hero, all those things. But this was similar. And, you know, the race car drivers have to be built a little bit differently, because you're going 200 miles an hour in, you know, in steel, and you know what comes with that. I mean, I remember when Dan Weldon died, IndyCar driver. You know, there's a lot with that in racing, and that's, you know, there's obviously more risk there. But I remember those drivers, even though they got in the race car the next week. His own son got in the race car the next week and went to Rockingham and they race. There was still that, this is dangerous what we do. And I'm sure those football players, you know, they're going to suit up again. They're not going to walk away, you know. But they know that. It's just, it makes that risk in everything that you know you've signed up for that much more palpable.
100%, Chase. And, you know, I think which was really great to see from the players last night is when they created a wall around him and he was receiving medical attention and they decided to create a wall around Damar Hamlin because, you know, that is so personal, what was happening on the field. And they knew that obviously this game was nationally televised. There were cameras everywhere. But I thought it was just really remarkable that you saw all of the players from both teams kind of hide him, you know, in a moment where everyone in the world could watch what's going on. And, you know, he's fighting for his life. And they decided, you know, to protect him from the outside world because, I mean, nobody wants to see that. And the broadcast stopped showing replays. But I actually took a class in grad school on, you know, how you – it was a Bob Kostick's class. You know, I went to Syracuse. He taught the class. And they they taught you how to – you know, there is no playbook, like you said, but what you should do when you're in a situation like that. Mm-hmm. You know, what you should do when you're in a situation, like, for instance, a couple weeks earlier, which ironically is the Bengals game, the Tua Tagovailoa situation, where his hands after the concussion – and as a broadcaster, you don't expect things to happen like that, but you need to realize that things very well can happen like that. And you, in a moment like that, need to be ready to know what to say, but also you can't speculate because we're not doctors. And by looking at a situation, you can't say, oh, well, this is that and this is what is happening. But, you know, in the class, we saw a lot of, you know, pretty bad plays of players getting hurt and how the broadcast crew handled it. But I can't even say enough at how well people did covering it last night, and just thoughts and prayers to the whole family. And we'll keep you updated whenever we know more information, but I have a feeling we won't know a lot.
Yeah. For a while. I mean, it'll be a while because right now we don't need to know anything. I mean, we know what we need to know. That's the way it is. Elliot on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, says, I remember when Keontae Johnson went down on the court for Florida a couple of years ago. Yep. First thing I thought about. Yeah, I remember that too.
Well, even Willie brought up Mark Borowiecki earlier this year with the Nashville Predators, a hit to the head, and all of Bridgestone went completely silent. And Willie said on our show, he said, you know, when you're covering that, we know him. Mm-hmm. We see him around all the time. You have no idea what could be happening.
Ronnie in Columbia says, absolute kudos to the teams. Being a medical professional who's been involved in many resuscitation events with patients, it isn't something that majority of people need to see. My heart breaks and hope he has a full recovery. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I have family in the medical field. I mean, they've told stories before, and I get that. Look, the teams, the league, as I was saying earlier when we started the show, there's no right way to go about this. And, you know, even if there was a discussion about starting the game back, you know, they got to the right spot. And I think taking some time was the right move, you know, with everything
100%,
involved.
100%. And you try to find grace in the fact that where he was, you know, the NFL has the best medical staff. They had people be on site, and then he was able to be transported to UC, which was right in Cincinnati. So, yeah.
Coming up next, we will keep you updated on Damar Hamlin and his situation. We'll continue to discuss that. Weigh in 615-737-1025. But we will get into a little bit with the Titans and their plan for Jacksonville, because I got to admit, I said yesterday I didn't think this was going to happen, and it did happen.
Vrabes proved you wrong.
Vrabes proved me wrong. We will discuss that coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, The Game.
You made a decision on the quarterback?
Yeah, Josh will be our quarterback. I've talked to both quarterbacks and let them know that Josh will be our quarterback for this week, and then Malik has to continue to prepare like a starter. I'm fairly confident in, you know, Malik's going to, you know, do something to help us win in this football game, you know, and so I just, you know, hopeful that he'll, and I know he will, continue to prepare like he has and continue to improve throughout practice.
Mike Vrabel, Titans head coach, naming Joshua Dobbs the starter for this week against the Jacksonville Jaguars. Chase and Michelle, Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic here with you. Nick Kieser with some raindrops, and there are raindrops falling. Keeping an eye on the skies today with some severe weather potentially in the area. We'll keep you updated on that. But look, I said yesterday on our show that I didn't think Vrabel would name a starter, and he proved me wrong. So, you know, I admit when I'm wrong, I was wrong.
There you go, Chaser.
And, you know, admitting is the first step towards recovery. So there you
go. First step. I feel like he probably knew he was going to get so many questions, and he's just like, you know what, I'm over this. I'm just going to.
So I'm going to tell you what surprised me the most is that not only did he name a starter, but he did it for Jared. That Jared asked the question, and he actually answered it.
But. He's like, you know what? Yep, he's a starter. Malik's going to prepare like he's a starter as well. Okay, next.
Yeah, what did you read into that, though? Because I did kind of take that as, yes, Josh is going to start the game, but, you know, he said, like, Malik's going to do things to help us win. So, I mean, are there going to be
a little two-quarterback scheme situation?
Honestly, like, we don't need to do that. Like, let's
keep it simple, stupid.
Keep it simple, stupid. Malik Willis, bro, just stand on the sideline and learn. Like, that's what you need to do. I mean, I don't want to – because every time – and I was pro design packages for Malik Willis at the beginning of the year. But when I saw what that looked like, I was not pro that anymore.
That was when Ryan Tannehill was healthy, when the offensive line was healthy.
That was when I saw, you know, decent play in preseason, but, you know – They tried it a few times, and he fumbled, and it didn't work. So I think you go Josh Dobbs and just stay with Josh Dobbs.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I don't read too much into Mike Vrabel saying, you know, Malik's going to prepare like a starter, because he always says the next man up mentality, everybody needs to be available at a moment's time if somebody gets hurt, and we know that this team has, you know, experienced a lot of that. So I don't read too much into him saying that about Malik, because Vrabel always says, okay, next man up. We're worrying about who's healthy, who's on the field. So he always tells them to prepare like starters. But, yeah, I mean, Josh Dobbs will start. I can pretty much guarantee he'll play the entire game unless something happens, unless he gets hurt, knock on wood. You never want to see that. But, yeah.
Yeah, I do too. And I'm, you know, I know that it's easy to speculate with Robinson being fired and now Willis essentially being benched for a guy that's been in the organization for 2 weeks. You know, has Vrabel given up on Malik Willis? Has the organization given up on Malik Willis? And the answer to that could be yes. I don't know. I mean, it could be that Vrabel wasn't really on board with it, didn't think he fit. I mean, we know, you know, here's the other part of this. It's pretty clear Todd Downing has struggled as offensive coordinator. I mean, I laughed last night because there was a sign at Monday Night Raw that said, fire Todd Downing.
Wait, really?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
That's the
second time that I've witnessed that at a wrestling event. Ken Whisenhunt, when he was the Titans head coach, this was towards the end, he was front row at Monday Night Raw, and they showed him, and he got booed out of the building. He left. And then he was fired like a few weeks later.
Oh, gosh.
And then I saw the fire Todd Downing last night. But if you have an OC that's struggling on a good day with play calling, a quarterback with the gifts that Malik Willis has, you think that's going to work? I don't.
No. And Peter King, I mentioned this on the show yesterday. Peter King came out with an article saying that, I mean, he obviously has sources within the organization that Titans they're already out on Malik Willis. So, I mean, who knows what that will look like for the team next year? I mean, there are so many different ways that this organization could go. And this team could look a lot different in week 18 than it does in a couple months, with whether Josh Dobbs will be the backup, whether Malik Willis will be on this team, whether Ryan Tannehill will be on this team.
Tyrone Davenport was on Caroline Willie and D-Mace yesterday, though, and was asked, does Vrabel still believe in Willis?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think he believes that Willis could be a good quarterback, but just the inefficiency. And he made a really good point, and it resonated with me, because he talked about Willis as a guy who is continuing to develop, but then he pointed out how over the last 4 to 6 weeks, they've been at a walkthrough pace in practice. So the speed of the game is something that he's not getting to see consistently, and that's kind of hurt his development. You know, it hasn't given him an opportunity to, you know, get caught up and have the game slow down, and Vrabel pointed to that. So I think when you get up there and you start to, you know, give reasons and explain, you know, how a guy's development has been hindered because of situations, I think that does mean that you still believe in him.
I think that's an interesting point that he makes, you know, not having the full speed of games and practices. And it just goes back to what's very apparent to me is he's not ready. And, you know, he's not ready to be the starter. And, you know, I've said a few times, we talked about it with D-Mace last week when I was on, that, you know, are the rules, the roster rules, have they kind of hindered young quarterbacks in this league, especially guys that, you know, don't come out of a situation where they're a 3 or 4 year starter at big time programs. You know, he came from Liberty. Yes, he was with a good coach in Hugh Freeze, but you know, he transferred out of an SEC program. So, you know, because you have to have 53, you can't have that third
quarterback
that doesn't count against the roster. You know, does that hurt things? I mean, I believe if they put in a roster rule that said, you know, you can carry 54, but the 54th player is the third quarterback, and that's the only, you know, spot you can use, it changes things. He's not the backup. It probably would have been Logan Woodside. Now, I hope that this team actually addresses backup quarterback. They may have to address starting quarterback. I don't know. But, you know, actually address backup quarterback at this point. But it's just shown me that he's not ready. And Dobbs, even though he has not been a starter in this league, has been around enough that he can command an offense, and that's what they're trying to get him to do.
Well, and Chase, I like the point you brought up about what you talked about with D-Mace and the rules, because, you know, after Malik Willis was named the backup quarterback, and then after seeing his performances, everybody on Twitter and people even I talked to were, oh, he never should have been the backup, he never should have been the backup. But, I mean, you know, you look at it, and his ceiling is probably higher than Logan Woodside's, but yeah, you just don't know yet because he hasn't had time to develop. You don't bank on Ryan Tannehill getting hurt, but a lot of this the lack of development is the fact that Ryan Tannehill did get hurt, and he had to play when he wasn't supposed to play. And I remember even talking to him in training camp, and he said that, like, the main thing he was working on was, you know, his brain and his feet matching up. And that's all about processing, being able to see things, being able to, you know, understand what's happening on the field. And, you know, he doesn't get to watch the game from the sideline and then, when Tannehill comes over the bench, see what he's looking at. He did for a couple games, and then, you know, next man up mentality, he had to get out there. But, you know, I agree. I wish the Titans would have had a backup quarterback who could step in a time of need when Ryan Tannehill gets hurt. But because of that rule, you would have had to put Malik Willis on the practice squad, and he could have got picked up, and he was a third-round draft pick. You still want to see what type of potential he has, but unfortunately you weren't able to do that, and then Ryan Tannehill gets hurt, and here's the situation we are in right now.
Yeah, and that's, like you said, that's where they are. I thought, I was listening to the pregame show on Thursday, and, you know, I thought Jared kind of described it as, you know, you have your one, you have your quarterback one, you have a two. There are guys that are, they're number twos, and that's what they are, but they're really, really good at it. You know, I think Jacoby Brissett probably falls
Gardner
into
Minshew.
That. Gardner Minshew. I mean, those are backup quarterbacks. And the definition to me has always been of a backup quarterback of, he's not a guy you can ride with for 17 games, but if your starter goes down and you need him for 3 or 4, you can trust that guy. Mm-hmm. And then you have the 2-3 hybrid, which is, they're probably more of a 3, but they can be a 2. But then that kind of gives you the 1 or 2 game window. And, you know, unfortunately, that's what the Titans are stuck with right now. Malik Willis, to me, is not even close to being a true backup.
No.
Like, he's just not there yet. And even though he's a third-round pick and you kind of needed him to be, that's just where they are. I think Dobbs being named the starter was the right move. And I, like I said, I admit that I was wrong. I knew he was going to start. I didn't think Vrabel was going to admit it on Monday. And so that was...
I think Vrabel is just like, we just need to win. We can't go seven games losing. I think Vrabel
sat in his office yesterday and he heard our show because he's huge. He's a fan of yours, and probably doesn't even know who I am, but that's okay. And said, you know what? I'm going to prove this guy wrong.
my third press conference. He's like, who are you? I'm like, Michelle. And I was the level two COVID rules.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
so
yeah.
I couldn't technically speak. And I was like, hi. And he was like, do you have a question? But I technically wasn't allowed to ask one. And yeah, so that was my first back and forth with him.
I'm going to bestow a little advice on you if that ever happens again. I am a big fan of Robbie Bourne, but the head coach can trump that rule.
I had only been there, I think, four
days. I know,
but
if the head coach asks you, do you have a question, you ask the head coach a question.
I know. It was a situation. I was like, oh, gosh, here we go. I should have told him I was Rex Rhodes' boss. I hope you're listening,
Rex
Rhodes.
Oh, yeah, don't know. I don't know if that would have helped you.
Yeah.
I mean, he does. I joke that, and like, here's the thing. I've only gotten to be around him a handful of times because I've been on the air during a lot of their practices and press conferences. And, I let you all cover the games, and that's just not where I'm at in my career anymore. And so I'm just not around him a lot. And, when I do go to things, I don't think it's appropriate for me to ask a question because I'm not there every day. And, but I mean, it's like, hey, coach, how you doing? It's kind of that.
Give it a little peace.
Yeah, but anyway, Josh Dobbs named the starter. We'll get into that with Chris Sanders and much more coming up at 10 o'clock. But up next, time for the Daily Power Play. The Predators back in action tonight at Bridgestone Arena against Montreal. We will discuss that coming up next here on Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3, the game.
What's been the most surprising aspect of this season so far, David?
Surprising is just I felt again very honestly that we're going to be a more consistent team than we have been to this point this year. I think everybody's had a little bit of their ups and downs, and I feel it's there, but it's just not coming as easily as it did last year. At the top of the food chain, you have players like Shane and Forsberg. They got 40 plus goals last year, and they're playing well, but not at that level of production last year. Even like our what I would call our role players, the herd line, that was Decisions, Trennan, and Janot, that has been actually broken up because we just individually we're just looking for a little bit more. And they're really struggling. Janot had 24 goals last year. He's only got three this year. I think he's playing hard, but the puck certainly is not going in for him. Trennan got a couple of goals as of late, but I think he's got five. So it's earlier. I think it's there. It's just we're just not getting it on a consistent basis, and we're it's a power play to a certain extent. We've that was a fantastic for us last year. I think it was sixth in the league, and this year we're really struggling. I think we're 30th in the league in the power play. If we could just get a little bit more going on the power play, that could make the difference in every game. So
Predators general manager David Poile earlier this morning on Robbie and Rex Road. His new spot will be 8:30 every Tuesday with Robbie and Rex Road, so be sure to check that out as a part of our revamp lineup here on 102.5, 106.3 The Game. Back here, Chase and Michelle, Chase McKay, Michelle Knezovic with you. And like, I can't agree with David Poile anymore. I mean, this team, their biggest obstacle this year has been their lack of consistency, whether it's 5-on-5 or the power play or what have you. You go back and you look at their games, a lot of these are close. They're in these. There's, obviously been a couple of blowouts along the way, but it's the fact that they can't get consistent goal scoring. Now that you have Philip Forsberg, who has started to show signs that, all right, here we go, the Scoresberg streak is coming. He had a hat trick the other night, which you always love to see that, and it's been a while. Nick, when was the last time he had a hat trick?
I could not tell you when he last had a hat trick.
You're a walking Preds encyclopedia. I thought you
know,
would have that.
I'm so sorry. I want to say it came probably toward the end of the last regular season. I couldn't tell you an opponent necessarily, but I mean, he's had quite a few as a Nashville Predator. He's had, I would say, at least four or five since he's joined the team. But I don't know if you guys ever heard this term, but I know we have the game against Montreal this evening. Montreal got bag skated yesterday.
Yeah.
So I talked to just teasing Enemy Lines that's coming up, you know, during our pregame show. They are just depleted right now, and the Preds have a good chance to just, you know, we talked about this yesterday, for them just to get back, you know, scoring good goals, being consistent, and David just talked about that. So I'm curious to see how they answer this evening, and yep. Their goaltending's not great either.
Three straight games that Philip Forsberg has scored a goal, which, I hope that is a sign of things to come. He's taken the lead, the team lead in goals, which is – quite frankly, where he should be.
Well, he's expected to do things like that, especially with the new big contract. And, you know, another guy we talked about this morning with David Poirot was Tanner Jeannot in the Herd line, right? Mm-hmm. Those are guys who we saw produce more than they did last year. I mean, Tanner Jeannot was in the consideration for Rookie of the Year at one point. He's been a guy who just hasn't been able to break out this year, Chase.
Yeah, and I'm concerned about that. And, you know, John Hines has basically broken up the Herd line, which I think it was time he needed to. I mean, and just they weren't producing.
Yeah.
Poyle referenced Trennan, who's scored a little bit as of late, but Sissons you haven't seen as much from.
And even Mikael Granlund,
not as much. Yeah, I mean, he's been on some assists, but
he's not a goal scorer.
Yeah, he's not a goal. He's Granny Apple, so that's, you know, kind of his thing. But They need more secondary scoring. That is a term that David Poyle will use a lot, and you'll hear that a lot when he's on with you all, because it's Forsberg, Duchesne, you want a lot out of those guys, but you're going to have help down in the lineup too, and Tanner Jeannot falls in that category, and he just simply has not been doing it.
Well, and another guy who was on the team last year, 13 goals for them, but now is in Milwaukee, Philip Tomasino, he also spoke on, said that, you know, he could be close to a call-up this year, but he just didn't look himself in training camp, Poyle said. And, I mean, he's a guy Preds fans are like, why is he not on the team? They need guys who can score, and you think another year under his belt. But, I mean, what do you think, Chase?
Yeah, I mean, look, Phil Tomasino, and by the way, Robbie Stanley, I'm done with you. He says the last time Philip Forsberg had a hat trick was this past Saturday. I'll see myself out. Thank you, Robbie.
Appreciate you, Robbie.
Tomasino is one that I'm just kind of waiting. You know, I mean, I think at some point you're going to see him back here. He did get hurt, so that kind of slowed things down. But he's played 22 games for Milwaukee, 18 points, so close to being a point per game player, 8 goals. I think they're, you know, it's funny. I've been on this, why not just call him up? He played 76 games last year for 32 points, but he was playing a lot of fourth line, you know, bottom 6 minutes. I go back to the Preds official podcast. I should have pulled this because this would have been a good clip to use. Barry Trotz, longtime Predators coach, was on with Darren and Kara. And he said, and I'm paraphrasing, but he said, I would rather overcook a guy in Milwaukee that I believe can be in the top six than call them up to Nashville and have them play bottom six when that's not my purpose for them. And I took that as, okay, look, you can Ellie Tolvanen, you can use that as an example, yeah. You know, because he was playing a lot of bottom six. Phil Tomasino is another one. And I think he is absolutely right. And Barry Trotz was the one who invented the phrase that all roads to Nashville go through Milwaukee. And so if the organization, and I believe this is the fact, if the organization is like, look, we're going to give him more time than maybe he needs in Milwaukee until we absolutely have to call him up here to make him a top six forward, which is what they want him to be. And I believe he can be.
Well, and it kind of reminds me of, right, you get Cody Glass last year, and then you move him up to Milwaukee. He's there for a majority of the season, and now we've seen him have a little bit of, you know, an offensive stride, I guess you could say, for this team. But, I mean, they need to get a win tonight because then they're going to go on a 5-game road streak. So, I mean, anything you can do, Nick said, you know, this Montreal Canadiens team, you know, they're depleted. Anything you can do to get some points tonight, get a win tonight in Bridgestone before you go on a 5-game road streak.
Right. So the Predators in action tonight. Max Herz will have pregame for you at 6 o'clock on these airwaves, followed by the call, Pete Weber. And who's in tonight?
Annette?
No, in the color analyst role there, producer Nick.
Well,
Jay Moore.
Yeah, probably. I would say Jay Moore is in tonight.
Almost said Hal. Hal's doing TV because he's big time now. But they will be on the call tonight, so look forward to that with coverage beginning at 6. Coming up next, Chris Sanders, forever Titans wide receiver, going to join us. We'll get his thoughts on DeMar Hamlin and also the Titans as well. That is next. Chase and Michelle, 102.5, 106.3 The Game.